Welcome to the top.
1%. Oh, yeah.
1% of show. I'm Paul Salamanca.
And I'm Tom Bocard. Thanks for joining us today to learn how some of the top 1% CEOs, sales leaders, coaches, athletes, and other professionals have overcame adversity and built their top 1%er mindset.
That's right. And this show is live, 6 p.m. Eastern every Thursday. If you want to see one of these shows live, you could go to our home base, which is top1percenter.com. You could also see links to previous episodes there or download the show where all podcasts are available. So, Tom, let's get into this next guest, this next show. I'm looking forward to it.
Take it from the top, man, 1%. Take it from the top, man, 1%. Take it from the top, man, 1%.
All right, welcome to the top. I'm your host, Paul Salamanca, along with Tom Bocard, co-founders of the Top 1%er Academy, the first ever sales coaching at scale company, where we combine SaaS with coaching services for high growth companies and sales professionals designed to transform average salespeople into top performing sales teams in their respective industries. And we have proven over and over again that with the right mindset, dedication, combined with our top sales methodology, anyone can make it to the top 1% in sales. But don't take my word for it. Let's quickly hear from some of our graduates who have made it to the top 1% of their sales leaderboard within 6 months of graduating from the top academy.
I was 200% to quota last month.
Top rep in North America month two.
Well, I got promoted. So that, and I think the academy definitely helped with that.
Because I just hit back-to-back months, which nobody on our team's done.
Our sales in the last month have really increased or doubled since January.
Well, I am honestly pretty confident in saying that I am the best AE on my team.
It's the way to be. You gotta be a top 1%er. You gotta seek out the best in everything you do. You gotta have the confidence and you gotta learn the skill sets to do it.
And that was just a few of many great results, but we have a show to get to, so let's get started. Today we have one of five most influential people in my personal career, Matt Kane, CRO at Cypher Learning, an intelligent learning platform company for schools, universities, and organizations worldwide. Kane has over two decades of experience and previously held leadership roles at Formative, Newzella, Tango, QuickCom, to name a few. He's one of the very few revenue leaders I know who can take companies from as little as 10 million ARR to over 250 million ARR. And Matt, you are the man who was my very first sales manager back in 2003. You're the man who gave a 23-year-old kid with entrepreneurial experience a shot at the big leagues, even though I had no corporate sales experience. You're the man who spent a lot of time going over the presentation with me over and over and over again until I got it right. You're the man who made me disciplined about every inch of the sales process. You're the man who never quits and took a flight the next day after your previous US Airways flight 1549 landed in the Hudson River. You are the man who believed in me when I needed it the most. You are simply the man, and I am so grateful for you. If it wasn't for you, I would not be here today. So Matt, thank you from the bottom of my heart and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Paul, and thanks for having me. And thank you for all those the great words there. And again, everything that I did for you, I did for you and for everybody else that's ever worked with me or for me to be as one. So thank you very much for having me today. I'm excited to join you.
And I know people talk about hiring out of profile. Dude, I was out of profile. Like, I was an entrepreneur, started my own business in college, but you took a shot on me. Do you still do that?
I do a point, and I think it times have changed a little bit, and you know what life was like in 2003 and what life like is right now in 2024 is a little bit different. But I do have five standards I live by, and you nailed number one a long time ago. And I saw a lot of myself in you when I met you originally, early in my 30s, was the fact of somebody that, number one, I really believe that you would never, ever be outworked. You were so competitive and wanted to win so bad and was willing to do what it took to do there and do it all legally, but do it in the right way. Number two is control what you can. I felt that you were very coachable and had an understanding of that mindset. It's like there's things in this world you can control and there's things in the world you can't. You control more than you think though. And that's a very important dynamic to be able to have. Number three is, and you did this and you really embraced this with me. And I think it really did change who you were and grew into something that you've done is live in the truth. Most important thing is live in the truth. Okay. Understand where you are, understand where you want to go, and never forget that different dynamic there. That part is where forecasting, best case, worst case, things like that I know are fundamentals that you stayed with that makes you a sales leader and teacher and trainer. So important.
Yep.
Number four I have is really be competitive every day. Compete. You have to compete every day and be inspired by it. And last thing, and this gets lost a little bit, especially in this generation we talked about sometimes, work with urgency. Work with urgency. We only have a certain amount of time in this world, and I'll probably take you through a story in a little bit about how precious our time is, and it might be taken at any time, and you got to make sure you work it that way.
And I don't know if you remember, do you remember the big interview question you asked me in your office where I thought I knocked it out of the park? I could actually see the lights go on and be like, wow, I think I'm going to give this guy a shot. Do you remember what that question was?
Yes, it was. If you go out to dinner with anybody, alive or dead, who would it be and why? And what was most important in your answer?
So I don't know how long I was thinking about it. To me, probably felt like 2 hours, but there were so many thoughts going through my head. First, I was like, okay, let me just say a president. I think the president was George Bush at the time, President Bush. I was like, what am I going to ask Bush, right? And I was like, this guy's not going to like the answer. And then I was like, I don't know, Pamela Anderson. I was like, dude, I definitely can't say that. So then I was like, all right, let me focus really quickly. And who would I really want to have dinner with? And I said, Pat Riley. And I think coincidentally, you were reading Pat Riley's book.
Yeah, I was. And it wasn't like on my table. It wasn't on my desk. It wasn't at. And that one question changed the dynamic and shift that had me sit up in my seat and said, you know what? If he really does believe that Pat Riley is and it wasn't just the answer. What did I follow up with? Why?
Why? You said why. And I said, because what he loves to do in the beginning of the season is break down his team. And then as the season progresses, builds the team up and up. So now they're at their peak performance when they're in the playoffs. And that's exactly what we do at the Top Academy. And that's what you did to me, Kane. I actually wrote a post about you. I don't know if you remember, I don't remember when it was, but I pulled it up here and it talks about, I thought my worst sales manager was when I first got into enterprise sales. He made me send and print out agendas before every meeting, fire up my laptop in the lobby to save time. Remember that? The projector we used to bring around in the laptop? Like,
I remember.
Fire it up. We don't have time. We get in there, you got to be ready to go. You made me remove the word hope from my vocabulary. I can't tell you how many times I would say, well, I hope this, hope is not a strategy. I kept saying over and over again. You would ask me to ask buyers why now, know the compelling event, send the recap email within 24 hours of the meeting, travel with only my carry-on, no checked bags, read a new book every month, keep Salesforce updated every single day. He made me a more disciplined sales professional, understand hope is not a strategy, and appreciate how much better he made me. Shout out to my man, Matt Kane, who's still running the game. Dude, thank you very much. The game has changed though, right? The game has changed. I don't know. I know sports has changed. We're coaches and high school coaches, football coaches, they can't do the same things anymore. Have you changed your style?
That's a great question, Paul. And thanks again for writing that post a couple of years ago and then and recognizing and realizing what it was about. And everything I was doing there was to prepare you for this moment that you're having right now and everything that you can give to others. So thank you. It has changed. And it's changed in the fact of how you fundamentally speak and talk and plan for people. It has changed on some levels and some things haven't changed. And discipline to me will never go out of style. It can't. It's the fundamental thing that you see with almost all great athletes. You see it with all great people that are successful. They have discipline and they do that. And that discipline is not motivation. It's the internal thing that drives them to be where they want to be. You have to be able to have that mindset. And one thing I've done is you got to be uncomfortable being uncomfortable. Yep. And that growth mindset is what really is something that is so critically important to have it. And if you have people around you that don't have that mindset, it is going to be a challenge to be able to work through it. So you have to be able to identify that and tap into it. So it's still out there. There's still people that can do it, but how you have that conversation and how you're giving that feedback and the directness, maybe you have to be positioned a little bit differently, but it's still there. And there's a lot of tools now that are out there that I use. There's some software tools I use. There's a tool called 15-5. That's 15-minute like review that you do once a week. And then the manager gets it for 5 minutes or the leader gets it for 5 minutes and gives perspective. And it truly opens up with areas they can see. And then you can address those areas and work through it. Listen, everybody wants to win. Most people, if you've made the right hires, right? I know you spend a lot of time on hiring. I've seen some of your podcasts, which are fantastic. To me, that's one of the things that changed, but still going through and looking at those fundamentals. You have to find people that are hungry. There's a lot of really talented people out there that have a lot of talent. Talent doesn't win the game.
Yep.
It's the people that are willing to do the sacrifice, to do the things, because people still appreciate that, especially in enterprise sales. And are they willing to grow and change? And that evolution has to be there all the time through the sales process that you're familiar with, that you and I have grown up with and built over this time frame.
I know you instilled in me the sacrifice for the customer. Customer is always first. The discipline that you have. Speak about your discipline. Like, do you still work out like a maniac? Do you still wake up at 3 a.m.? What's your routine like?
The 3 a.m., I'm still sleeping on that side, but try to get the a mile run at the gym outside beforehand, then get in there at 5:30 when it opens. Do 50-minute hard work, then do the infrared sauna, and then do the cold plunge, and be done usually around 6:45. So to me, that having that thing is be able to help me stay focused, allows me to say, listen, whatever you're going to throw at me that day, it can't be any worse than what I just did for the last hour. 50 minutes. And that will keep your mindset ready to be able to go through it and be able to help you see different things and be able to work in different ways. And listen, you can always control usually the situation if you have clarity. And that clarity starts with the beginning of your day at 5 a.m. So that to me is kind of how I have been doing this. And it's worked for me for a pretty long time. And I continue to do that and really appreciate everything else that kind of goes through it.
And that's unique. I know everyone talks about it. Now people are saying like, hey, you don't have to wake up at 5 a.m. Everyone to each his own, right? But you can tell who's disciplined within your sales team, who's wired like that and who's not. But what about the talent these days in sales? The people growing up in sales, just starting in sales, I feel like they're not getting the proper support or the training. They're used to automation. They just set it and forget it. Like, what is going on with the younger generation as far as sales coaching?
Well, I think it has to be, again, disciplined and purposeful, right? And that commitment has to be from your leaders or someone like yourself that's working within organizations to be able to kind of break down and do that. You know, I talked about, when I started before even 10 years before I met you, right? I had the luxury of working for a company that I had access. I would leave at 8 a.m, their office, go back. This is when you went into an office, went to the field till 6 a.m. Then from 6 to 7, I'd sit with the CEO and the CFO at the time, at the time, and talk through all my sales calls. And, at 22 years old, 6 months in, 15 sales reps nationally, all anywhere from 30s to 40s. Why is a 22-year-old beating them all? Because I had someone inspire me. I had coaching there all the time. Being able to work through, understand the dynamics, understand the breakdowns, see the blind spots, understand it, dissect deals, dissect areas, and do that. And that taught me at a very early age, the success is there. And that situational awareness is so critically important and be able to have that. And you sometimes lose that when you just have things like you talked about, automation, but not really understanding the why. And one thing you and I joked about a lot was, why do you always ask why? Because if I can understand where people are coming from, I can understand where they want to get to. And that pathway gets lost a lot if you don't have them express it in their own words. And that to me is one of the things that I've seen you being able to coach with other people. And I think that's one of the things that to me makes a difference. And hopefully you got that from me I got a sense you did was able to pass it down to you. And what you're doing here with the Academy is pretty cool.
So that's what hasn't changed about you. You're still extremely disciplined. You're still doing a lot of things that helped you become successful. What have you changed about yourself from that time to now?
I think is a lot of more self-reflection. I had a little situation, you kind of hinted towards it. January 15, 2009, I was in, fortunately, I was in a plane crash that landed in the Hudson River from Captain Sully Sullenberger. I was in at 21A, and I could see the flames coming out of the engine on the left-hand side. And, you know, you're almost like sitting there going, hey, what a second, what's going on here? And you look around and you see people kind of flip it out. And I remember when the flight attendant, somebody stood up and she said, sit the bleep down. And that's when I knew it was serious. And I didn't realize at the time that both engines were out and that we're descending, and you're sitting there, and this goes back to the control thing. And I think, you know, that I did martial arts for a long time. And, you know, I sat there and thought about what my sensei taught me, and control what you can, understand the situation, have your outcome you're trying to get to and work through. So as that plane's going down there, I'm thinking obviously about my family, my children at the time, but also what can I do in this situation? And I have to trust the Captain Sully Sullenberger to land this plane and to kind of get it back there. So I originally thought we were going to LaGuardia, then I thought we were going to Teterboro or Newark. And then I had lived actually on the Hudson River at the time, or I lived up in Connecticut, but in the past I'd lived on the Hudson River in New Jersey. Yep. In the Galaxy, actually, where your parents yep. lived, which is kind of coincidental. And I knew that he was landing it in the river. And thank God I didn't realize that you can't really supposed to land a plane in the river. And it landed and it didn't break up. And the water came up to my, you know, waist pretty quickly. And I was like, great, now I'm going to drown because I'm in the back of it because I can't really swim well. And I was fortunate. Everyone cleared out. I ended up in the front, last seat there. Sully's waving me up. Come on, come on, come on. I jump in, puts it together. He goes back one more time with Captain Skiles, walks the plane. The ferry boats get there. Obviously, we're freezing. Tough situation there. But again, all things relative is about controlling what you can at the time, get on the boat, and the story's the story.
Pretty cool. That's intense. That is really intense. So okay. Did they tell you that you were going to land in the Hudson at some point?
No, actually they didn't. What Sully did, and I got a tremendous amount of admiration, I actually got an opportunity to speak with him at an event in California probably about 5 years later. That was great that he and I spoke together. And it was funny because people pay him tons of money, 55 minutes. And I was the closing act for it. So I gave the perspective from the passenger side, kind of gave that through. But the mindset that he did, and I thought this was really important, was you control the situation. And I, even when I was on the Neil Cavuto show the day after, when I got interviewed, or Diane Sawyer on Good Morning America, I was the person they interviewed, brought into the place, talked about this. He basically didn't say much. He said, brace for impact. And that was 90 seconds before. What he needed to do is not control panic, not tell everyone we're going, tell them where to go, kind of break it down. You know, it's all the expertise that he had. If you think about it, right, it's all the discipline that he had, all the experiences he had throughout his life that go there, right? Going to the Air Force Academy, right? Yeah. Learning how to fly planes on gliders, you know, going there and working through it. It's pretty good. And to be transparent, if you were to go to the Air Force Academy, it's not easy, you know, it's not enjoyable. It's 4 years of very tough work, and you're going to have times where you're going to, you know, question yourself, but thank God he did that, because without that, I don't know if I could have, because people were telling him, if you remember, where were they telling him to go? Go back to LaGuardia. He knew he wouldn't make it anyway. And that would have ended up in Queens probably, you know, not on the runway,
and so, not on the top 1% or podcast.
Yeah, not doing that. So, but what that taught me, going back to your question, is appreciation for life, appreciating that. I have a rule now, you know, I don't spend time with people that don't want to be successful, don't want to grow, don't want to be different. And it's not that I want to be only with successful people at all. I want to help people. I want to support people. I shifted some of my, one of my positions or two positions I had, recently been in the educational space, and talk about making a difference for people that need help, that need support to be able to do those things and be able to get those products out there and be able to make a difference in school districts across this country that aren't evenly and not have equity is pretty impressive. So what's changed within me is the mission to do it. It's still being able to push people to be uncomfortable, push people to be better than they could be and have those things there, but doing it in a more compassionate type way to do it, and know and work with urgency, because I know that my days are always numbered. And what are you going to do tomorrow to make yourself better than you were today is fundamentally what I've been doing.
I love it. So let me relate this to sales. I know you know what I'm talking about when, thanks for sharing, by the way, that is some story. So when you're, let's say, working with a sales leader or a rep on a very important, crucial, critical deal for the quarter, for the year that you must have, mm-hmm. and something goes wrong, because something always goes wrong at the very end, you get a chance to actually tell the person's character. You get to see the person's character in action in that moment, mm-hmm. right? And all of it comes up. And I'm sure you saw a lot of that on the plane going down. What type of reactions were you getting around you?
Around that time, you were seeing people praying. You were seeing people, the person next to me was freaking out a little bit. And those things happen. Right. The biggest thing is, what can you do? What can you do with clarity? What are those pathways there to get to the outcome you want to get to? Listen, the way the economy is right now and just where companies are, it's really critically important to make sure you're hitting your numbers or your projections. And there's some companies that with not having equity as available as it used to be, that these numbers are so critically important, because if you miss them, you're not only one thing that sales leaders and also salespeople have to realize is you are the bread, you are the funnel, you are making all the money, right? Like you are the one that are feeder. You are the feeders of these places. If sales don't happen, if the revenue doesn't go up, there are going to be tough decisions that are going to be done by management. You don't want to be able to have that. So you want to wake up every day with a little bit of that. You joke with you a little about, I used to call it the 45-pound plate on your chest, right? I wake up with that every day, even when I was running the sales teams working with you. And I wanted my reps to feel that too, because I wanted them to feel inspired, but also understand that they had that responsibility for everybody out there. So to me, that's one of the key things to do it. When deals get mixed up, they always do. I had a deal that we're closing tomorrow, very, very large logo here in the United States, very proud of us. One of our probably our best logo we'll have closed in the 10-year history of this organization. And, you know, there's people in the C-level that were a little concerned about doing certain things around it. And just because it was maybe, you know, unknown or didn't have all the answers and stuff like that. And you're going to have those things. And those things are going to be out there. But in the same aspect, those things, if you kind of take a step back, you get to that comfort level, you realize it through and had to be worked through a little bit. And yeah. I was so proud of how everyone worked together on it. And some people were like, hey, getting a little bit concerned. I said, everything will come together. Everyone's just got to breathe. Yep. And map it out. And when you map it out and you see it, all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, we can do that. Oh my God, we can do it. It's going to make us even actually four times better than we were. And pushing yourself and being uncomfortable for that time for yourself or for others is what makes it special. And to me, that's kind of one of those things I look at when those things happen. And I always say the curveball's coming. I always told you, right? It's coming. Yep. You just haven't seen it yet. It will show up, right? And I think that's one of the key things when I've heard some of the stuff you guys have talked about in the past is it's pretty cool that you guys have picked up on that. So
yep. I mean, if there's no curveball, you kind of question if you're even playing the
game. why am I making so much money here, right?
Yeah. So Matt, thanks for coming on the show. I know we could sit here for hours talking.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I want to thank you for everything you've done for me personally. Before we leave though, if there was one advice you'd give your younger self out there who's looking to get into sales leadership, what advice would you give?
I think the biggest thing is to ask yourself, you know, are you going to want to take on the responsibility of others? You have to have that it's not just about you. It's about everybody else that's about you, around you, right? And it's the same love I have for you, Paul, and for others that have worked for me in the past. I would do anything for you guys. And you know that. And I think that part you got to ask yourself, because people that are growing up or that are in sales, that are individual contributors, they're going to need somebody that's willing to sacrifice themselves for others. And if you're willing to do that, that's a good starting point. But yeah. If you're not and you can't, you're not comfortable with it, especially to be transparent with some of this generation, you just want to make sure you have that, because the last thing you want to do is hurt others across that way. You don't want to do that. So to me, is making sure that you're willing to make those sacrifices that are bigger than you.
I love it. Great advice, Kane. Thanks again for coming on the show. It was great.
Thanks
again, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
And absolutely. For millions around the world listening to this, stay tuned for our next guest next week. Take care.
Welcome to the top.
Oh, yeah.
We killing annual quotas. It's the 1% show. In case you haven't noticed, we talking cold calling and sales and start with tight rhymes. Round here, we maintaining a 4x pipeline.